This is great news.
Making money off your pain? Parading the family tragedy? Trotting it out like a fucking tarted up pig so people will think you're an artist? You're pathetic.
Drop it.
Duncan and Buck come correct.
Man, I haven't really talked about this whole Will Smith being slapped thing. And the only thing I will say, I kind of come down, I don't know if you read the post that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote about.
I did read it. It was incredibly well written.
Yes, I was like, that is absolutely my feelings on
I was like, nailed it.
Yeah.
It's
embarrassing for everybody involved.
Yeah.
He should have been removed from the ceremony. Mm-hmm. I know there's talk of just banning him from the academy.
I mean, he's I don't know if you read this last night, he announced that he is resigned from the academy. I don't know what that means.
That's fine.
And I also think he said he did it before the outcome of any internal investigation, which I think means he gets to keep his award, which, I mean... I can't think of any occasion where someone can get up on stage, publicly slap someone, right?
Yeah.
Sit down, not be removed, then 5 minutes later go up, accept an award where everyone cheers them.
Yeah, all right. So the other thing is that like groundswell of like, well, he was defending his wife's honor. And I'm just like... Maybe I am a cuck in my old age or something, Duncan, but any of the women that I date, I were to pull some shit like that, they would be pissed at me for having gotten up in their business.
I've got, my wife is more than capable of handling herself.
Right.
If Chris Rock decided to crack any jokes at my wife's expense, she would open a can of whip ass on him. I told you before, my wife, I think it was like the third time she met my mum, referred to me in front of my mother as a fuck nugget.
I do like your wife a lot.
As a term of affection, Bo. So, I watched it with the cringe that everyone should have had watching something like that, and all the I think actually weirdly enough, Jim Carrey, who just appears every now and then, had a really good take on it, where he was just like, that it's embarrassing, the whole thing's embarrassing, the whole system of Hollywood, it's kind of embarrassing. And he's like, that if I was Chris Rock, I would have sued him for, what was he said, $200 million I would have sued him for, because that clip is going to exist online for all time.
Well, he also apparently Chris Rock, I conflated them into one person.
You've Brundle-flied them together.
I did Brundle-fly them. But apparently his ticket sales have gone through the roof on the back end.
Of course they have.
You know, I just publicly invite Will Smith to smack me right into a better tax bracket. It's really cringe. Unfortunate. It's really stupid. And, I'm of the mind that, any time that you resort to violence, especially in a setting like that, where it's just a bunch of rich people sitting around having dinner... and handing each other awards, that is not a setting for violence. And
No. There's another thing that's been doing the rounds, which is an interview on the, I don't know if you saw this, when did we become the Jay Leno show? Did you see this? I do cars now. There's a clip going around from an Arsenio Hall interview from 1994 where Will Smith's on that, and Will Smith publicly cracks a joke at a member of the house band who is a lady with alopecia.
Anyway, it's all stupid.
Time is a flat circle, Bo. Time is a flat circle.
All right, so I've got before we get into the movie stuff, so I've got another story for you.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So right. You and I have, you have two dogs, right?
I have three dogs.
Three dogs.
I know why you would think. I know why you're saying that, because like you weigh them together and they may make a dog. So you just assume there's another one there as well. Yeah, I get that.
It's funny you said that, because I was going to say I have the equivalent of those three dogs in just the Wonder Buddy.
Just the leg of your dog that you have is my three dogs combined. So, you're about to tell me you're about to get a second dog?
No.
Jesus, I was about to say, Bo, what are you doing?
No. This guy's plenty. No, the story is that Johnson, the Wonder Dog, last week, this is coming off, like I just got back from a cruise and all that kind of stuff, and which is why I have so much color. And the week after I get back, Johnson just starts shitting everywhere. And he's not on any different food or anything. And I'm like, oh no. Like, you know, and you do the stupid thing, which is to go online, and every diagnosis online is like, oh, your dog's intestines are just falling out.
Yeah. Dr. Google always gives you the worst result. You know what I mean?
So I end up talking to the vet a number of times throughout the week of like, you know, hey, Dr. Vet, my dog keeps shitting. And they're like, okay, just you make some food that's like rice and chicken and boiled chicken so that it's the most, you know, inane kind of food that you can feed the dog. So it resets their stomach and so forth.
Yeah, and resets the router bowl.
Yeah.
It literally resets the router. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Things come back on. It's like that scene in Jurassic Park where they have to run it and then do the and everything starts coming on. Yep, that's literally what it does. Rice and chicken every single day. And the same for me, just plain rice and chicken resets me.
So I do that, but it's still not getting better. It's been like 4 or 5 days, and and you know, so I talked to my vet and I'm like, hey, when can I just want to bring him in and make sure that it's not something more serious. And she's like, look, I've got it kind of booked up, so you're going to need to bring him in Sunday morning, which is kind of the emergency time. And just get here early and we'll take a look at him. And I'm like, oh, that sounds expensive. Emergency vet sounds pricey. In the grand scheme of things, was not too bad. So I take him in there. He immediately gets away from me getting out of the car and proceeds to have yet another runny shit. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, this is reflecting badly on both of us. And so they check him out, you know, and they're like, okay, he doesn't have Giardia, which, you know, that's really good. Doesn't appear to have any kind of blockage. Here's some antibiotics. Here's some probiotics. You know, just general stuff, and keep up with the chicken and rice. And, you know, this should all kind of resolve itself. And if it doesn't, let us know. And in fairness, in and out of there with all the medicine form and everything for under $200. So
that's pretty fucking great, boy.
Yeah, very pleased. And so anyway, on the back of this, like, I start giving him the antibiotics and that kind of thing. And Johnson is good because he eats just like, you know, Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
So I can just throw the antibiotics in with his food and it will just get gobbled up with everything else. And so then there proceeds to be a period of like 3 days where he doesn't shit at all. And so I'm calling my vet back and I'm like, hey, I've got kind of the reverse problem now, where this dog that had just been a sieve.
Yeah.
Now isn't pooping at all. And she was like, actually, that's not that uncommon, because he had kind of emptied the chamber and is now refilling it. And, you know, give it another day or two and then call me if it's a real problem. But more likely than not, it's just that his system is kind of getting back to normal and it takes some time for all that stuff to work its way through. And I was like, okay. And then I realized, and he's fine now. Like, the moral of the story, he's totally fine. But I had talked to my vet about my dog shit so much that it forged this kind of closeness
You
don't really expect it, like you have with a GP or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just called her yesterday and she was like, is everything okay with the Johnson? Is his stomach all right? And I was like, yeah, he's fine, but I've been dealing with some stuff. And I just wanted your take on it, because I really feel like we've gotten to know one another.
Hey, at those rates, it's cheaper than an actual therapy.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. My therapist is way too expensive for this kind of shit. This is like low level stuff. This isn't, I need to bring in the therapist stuff. This is more like, hey, why haven't I shaved in a week kind of stuff? Which the answer to that is because that's the last time I went on a date. It's the last time I had to be presentable for you other humans, so. Although I did go to that interactive Van Gogh exhibit that's been touring around. I don't know.
Oh, nice. Yeah. How'd you get on?
What now?
I said, how did you get on?
Oh.
It was good.
I thought you said, who did you get on? I was like, Duncan.
Who did you get on?
How rude. it was okay. I don't know. Like, I got the tickets as a gift, and I think if I had paid for it, I would have felt a little cheated.
Oh,
you know? I mean, it was...
Was it a pirate dance along again?
No. It was cool, and it was really interesting, and it's really... like, it's a good experience, but the tickets were like $60, and I don't know that it was $60 good. Mm. Like, if I paid $30, I would have been totally fine with it, but $60 seemed a little pricey. But like I said, I didn't pay for the ticket, so fuck it. And better yet, it was a gift from my now ex-girlfriend that I took a date on, which felt like I was really, you know, turning the knife. I mean, she didn't give a shit, but I felt better about it.
Yeah.
So, but it was cool. My favorite thing was that they had a lot of Van Gogh merch on your way out.
Oh, yeah.
And the best was there was like a Van Gogh starter kit that you could get for kids that is just the number of a local prostitute and a straight razor. So how are you?
I can't top that, nor will I. I'm great. Doesn't feel like it's been a couple of weeks since we did one of these, but then like I'm avoiding this slasher TV show like the fucking plague. Yeah. So much so that you messaged me last night and were like, have you even watched it yet? And I was like, I will watch it right before we record, and I will not let it even enter my thought at all. And then I watched it right before we recorded, and then I made a bold statement to you, Bo, which is I think this is the worst season of slasher. I think anyone that says this isn't the worst season of slasher has no concept of what it is to go back to back on these seasons. I think they have had the passage of time in between them, like a year or 2 years or whatever that is. I think when you go back to back on them, this one is easily, and I see this with like a great deal of confidence, this is easily the worst in the writing and the acting and the fucking flashbacks. And just everything. It's just, it's not even dumb. It's just a complete waste of energy. I'm looking forward to talking about episode 5 though. Half and all.
I've gotten to the point where if Dawn is not on screen, I just don't give a shit.
Like I switch off. Switch off.
Well, let's talk about some movies, good and bad here, Duncan. You want to go first? You got anything?
Yeah, I've got a good. I went out to check out that new Ty West movie, that X.
Oh yeah.
Really, really, really good. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, thought that was it. I think it's an interesting thing because I think instantly when that movie came out, there was a like we do with, I think horror might be the only genre that actually fucking does this, where like you instantly start talking about legacy of director. Mm-hmm. Like very early in a career, Ty West was one, like as soon as Ty West had The Innkeepers out, people were saying Master of Horror, like straight away. And I mean, that was essentially his third movie, if you remove Roost from it, which was an indie movie, if anything. You know, people are instantly talking about that. And, you know, Sacrament got a bit of a, you know, a bit of a backlash.
Not a terrible movie. The marketing on that was the real.
Yeah. The thing is, I've watched my initial viewing, I wasn't a fan. I've watched it twice since then. The last time I watched it, I was like, this is a really well put together movie. It's just familiar. Yeah. You know, its biggest issue is that it claims to be it does the reverse of every other horror movie, where it claims to be a completely original story and it's clearly Jonestown, right? Whereas every other movie does the based on a true story, where it's clearly not a true story. So yeah. Like, is the reverse of that? But you know, he's obviously been away. He's done some stuff. He's done some TV, etc. So him coming back with E24 was really interesting. And then before it came out over here, we'd already heard, oh, he shot a prequel to this movie. And I was like, well, that seems a bit strange, because that's not what E24 does. E24 has never released a movie that has a sequel. Everything that label's done is standalone. So that's 10 years of movies which are one and done's. So I was like, this is like even more bizarre. And then the news that had come out that he'd filmed at the same time. So basically back, did the Corman approach back to back, what to use, same locations, same actors. And then I watched it and I found it, once again, not the most original thing I've ever seen. Funny, dark, incredibly well shot. Very referential to the horror genre. And in a way, when it finished and I was like, oh, we're getting a prequel to this, I was like, I would watch that prequel. And I am not a prequel guy. I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, as soon as you start making prequels, all you're doing is creating plot holes in the movie that I've just watched, because you'll not answer everything, or you'll miss a point and I'll be like, well, that doesn't tie into that logically. But yeah, I'm like totally in for it. So I thought it was really, 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 really good. I think the only negative I would say, and I would see why people would say it, is I think there's a laziness in saying what the comparisons to the movie have been from a marketing point of view, is as Boogie Nights meets the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. It's Boogie Nights in that it deals with porn, but it doesn't deal with porn like Boogie Nights deals with porn. And it's, you know, it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre in that it's a house in the middle of a field in the middle of Texas, and there's an old couple. They're a little bit creepy. That's about the extent, like, of the comparison. So, like, I think you're better actually just going down the road of it's a slasher. It's, you know, it's a gory slasher movie, which has a dark sensibility about it. And boy, does that have a lot of Chekhov setups and deliveries all the way right through it. In a way that I kind of just, I got to the end and I was like, that was a hoot. Welcome back to the horror genre, Ty West. Mm-hmm. Just keep making movies here, because like I said, I don't think he's made a bad movie. And I would like to see, I would like to see more, as they say in Starship Troopers.
All right. So, well done. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen it yet. I am behind on literally every movie. But but speaking of kind of catching up, though, Duncan,
ooh,
I have a movie that I don't know if you recommended to me. I know Kate Pollock did.
Uh-oh.
So this could be like a little 1-2 punch. Anyway, finally caught up to the movie Fresh with Sebastian Stan and Daisy Ridley Jefferson. That's not,
yes, I didn't recommend that.
Okay, so I for some reason I thought you had also. Let me get her actual name. Her name is Daisy something, and then I just started saying words. So I'm gonna give you the same recommendation that Kate gave me, and I think it's the way to approach this. Daisy mm-hmm. Edgar Jones is the,
yes. I'm now looking at this. I have not seen this movie.
Okay. So, the basic premise is that Daisy Edgar Jones is just a young woman trying to find a guy. Nothing unusual about this. She mm-hmm. ends up meeting Sebastian Stan of Winter Soldier fame. And
yep.
But Pam and Tommy, like, it turns out he's a really good actor.
You know, yeah. versatile.
Yeah, very, very good in this. And, you know, they start seeing each other a little bit. He seems like a really nice guy. And then he invites her to a getaway where she is going to be kind of cut off from people and communication, and
all right.
And I will not go any further with what is what's actually going on there, because it's kind of worth the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good, Duncan. It's like like if I were putting together a top 10 of the year so far, it would be on that list. It is
cool.
It's really interesting, and it's kind of funny, and it's really well directed, and the performances are all good, and it gets gruesome in some ways that are like, oh, okay, so we're gonna go here. Fantastic. And it has kind of a like the resolution of the movie is really satisfying. Like I said, the less you know about it, like I even wonder if I've said too much, but you know, that like I've given you the setup that leads to here is the actual plot. And it's very, very good. It's really like, Daisy Edgar Jones in particular is incredibly charming in the movie. Mm-hmm. In a way that, like, early on, you're just kind of like, I'm on her side. I think she seems like a really good person, and I want things to work out for her.
Yeah.
And so when things start to get a little hairy, then you're like, oh, I, you know, and she makes a lot of very smart decisions in a very extreme situation where mm-hmm. you're like, oh, okay, I see how she's going to navigate this. And this is really smart, and also kind of plays to the weaknesses of, you know, the antagonist of the film. But it's really good. If you haven't seen Fresh, it's on Hulu right now. My biggest complaint, is it really a complaint? Before I say this, I was going to say it might be a little long.
My biggest complaint is that this movie cares too much.
Yeah, it works too late and too hard, and cares too much about its customers. I was looking at the runtime. Yeah, it's almost long? Yeah, it's almost 2 hours. You can maybe shave 10 minutes out of this thing, and it would be a little bit sharper, but it's still, you know,
that... If it's made for Hulu, you know, and once again, it's what we've been saying, if it's made for a streaming service now, all those things are like, it's maybe a little bit long, and that's because I think they anticipate audiences will hit a pause, go, you know, go grab a snack or something, come back, hit a play, or, you know, watch over 2 nights or 3 nights or 4 nights or whatever it is. So I will check that out. Let me hit you with my not bad, because I don't have any bads, but one that like was really, 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 really interesting. In fact, I would say it's one of my favorite things I've seen this year. However, is being marketed as a horror movie. I don't know if it's a horror movie. But it's, I don't know, it's occupied more space in my brain since I watched it than anything else that I've seen this year. It's a movie that will be out very soon, actually. I think HBO acquired the rights to it over in the States for their streaming channel, but it's a technically classed as a found footage movie. It's not a found footage movie. We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got a screener in for that. Speak to me at the end and remind me, and I'll hook you up. It kind of blew me away. Like, it's a first time filmmaker, well, first time director for a feature. Leading actress it's her first movie, and there's something surprisingly real and compelling and ethereal. There's a quality that really made me kind of think about, without sounding pretentious, the world, the internet, connectivity. Like, this movie weirdly would, the way I was describing it, like, it would pair surprisingly well with a movie like Pulse. Even though Pulse gives you the kind of like like the Japanese version of what the, you know, the internet and technology is doing to essentially the connectivity and interpersonal relationships that people actually don't have anymore in a country like Japan, in a city like Tokyo. This is kind of dealing with, if you live in the middle of nowhere America, small town America, and you are a bit niche and you don't have friends, the internet's your outlet. It's where you can craft who you are, and it kind of deals a bit with the reason it's kind of getting pegged as a horror movie. And I can kind of see why. It reminds me, it has a lot of shared DNA with that documentary HBO put out about the Slender Man. You know, the two girls. Once again, would pair exquisitely with that. But it's kind of dealing with, it's dealing with the idea of how that can consume, you know, how an internet, like just reading on that, if you don't have the right people there guiding you, or the right relationships, or the right, the ability to actually face-to-face sit down with someone, how that can actually stunt your understanding and perception of the world. And then on the other side, there is a really dark through line, like a really dark through line in that movie that goes, but it is essentially a tour de force of a young actress who plays
Anna Cobb, I believe, is
Like she's really, really, really fucking good. Like really, like in that, watching her, I believed that like everything she was doing was real. Like she just come across as, I could imagine someone like this in the world. It's a small indie affair. It doesn't look like there's a lot of money being spent on it at all. It leaves a lot up to the imagination. Doesn't really go out its way to explain much, which I enjoyed. But it's not that obtuse that at the end that you're like, well, that doesn't make a lick of fucking sense. It, you know, you will come away with it with an opinion, but it is just, it's got a fucking incredible score as well. Like an absolutely incredible score. And it's just kind of sat there for me since I watched it, and I saw it like almost close to 2 weeks ago, and it's still just sitting at the back of my brain, just kind of, it's built its own Occupy Wall Street commune, where it's just, you know, it's just there and it's not left. And I'm under embargo about actually physically reviewing it, but I will be putting a review out, and I will be getting the Baz on with me as well, because like the Baz is he's got a daughter who's just turned 19. And I think his perspective of what she was like with the internet, he's got very strong views on the internet already, could be really interesting from two different perspectives, him being the parent of a kid who is, you know, much older with the internet, and me with, you know, a kid that's turning 8 this month, who is like super aware of the internet, like to the point that we bought her, to go off on a slight tangent, bought her a t-shirt last week that had the Nirvana logo on it, because she saw it, she loved it, she thought it was really cool, got it. And I'm one of these, I hate the idea of someone wearing a band t-shirt and not having listened to the band. It's just the old school mentality. So she'd asked about it, so played some Nirvana songs in the car for her, which she liked, which shouldn't surprise me. I listened to a lot of like rock and metal anyway, but she liked it. And then she'd asked me if the band were still going, and I was like, well, no. I was like, yeah, the singer died a long time ago. And I didn't really give her much more details about that. And about 20 minutes after she come into the house, she was downstairs. She went upstairs on her iPad, Googled Nirvana, went on the Wikipedia page, found that the singer had committed suicide and did a lot of drugs. And then there was a lengthy conversation about, one, her internet use, and two, about the band, which spiraled out into this, you know, much bigger conversation and stuff as well. So she's grown up with the internet as a tool.
It's just
a device, you know, like if you need to know something, internet. So it'll be an interesting conversation from there. But first and foremost, as a movie, I think it was getting a lot of buzz last year from the festival scene, and I kind of see why critics are so high on it. I just happen to think along the lines of a lot of critics. I imagine if you're watching it to be scared,
maybe not.
It's not that sort of movie at all. Not even in the same sphere as that sort of movie. But it's kind of fascinating. So I will hook you up.
I appreciate it. It looks fascinating. It looks like kind of my jam.
If anything else, even if you don't like it, very much like Come True, like, you know, we had that conversation, you were like, I was with the whole movie, kind of fell apart in the last, you know, 1 minute.
Yeah.
The journey throughout the whole thing is just really compelling and fascinating. Just done in a way that I've not seen done before. It's tackling a subject matter I've seen plenty of filmmakers do, but it's just doing it in a more kind of vulnerable, personable way. So that's my not bad, actually, this is kind of fucking amazing. Kind of slanted things. Definitely in my tops for the year thus far. What about you? You always watch trash. There's some trash in there somewhere that needs to be flung out, Bo. What's the trash?
I just want that on my grave marker. Always watch trash.
Well, you keep me writing a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, like, especially the Shudder stuff where you're like, that, I watched this, it's really fucking bad. And I'm like, cool, I don't need to watch that now. It's scratched that from the list. What are you going to put me off this week?
Also new to Shudder, Duncan.
Oh, you're joking.
No, Shudder? This is perfect. Yeah, thanks for setting up that little T-ball. It's a movie called The Bunker Game that Shudder
just premiered. Oh, I'm not aware of this. Okay.
No reason for you to be aware of it. No reason for you to watch it. Here is the premise. And this is why I watch it, because I thought the premise was actually kind of cool, which is... Cool. There's this like underground World War II bunker,
uh-huh.
And a bunch of LARPers are using it for like, hey, we're going to go into this bunker for a weekend and we're going to do our role play business, but yep. They're not doing like medieval kind of Dungeons and Dragons role play. It's much more like a Fallout kind of scenario of like, oh, we're going to do this post-apocalyptic kind of role playing where the Germans basically towards the end of World War II just went all out on like chemical warfare and that kind of thing. Mm. And so this is the society that's been existing post World War II in this bunker, is the role play side of it. And anyway, the main character is a woman who, one of the problems of the movie is that the implication is that they've all been doing this for like a week or two. And you're like, this seems extreme. Like, I understand there's that whole Disney Star Wars hotel and whatnot where you go away for a week and you're on a Star Wars ship or whatever. But this seems like a big ask, and there are a lot of people doing it. And maybe I'm just not tuned into that culture, Duncan. I fully admit I'm not a LARPer.
I don't know. You went to an interactive Van Gogh exhibit. I mean, I would like to, like, you're the most cultured out of the two of us.
The Van Gogh LARPing scene, not as big as you might think. It's just a lot of like plaintive, it means something to me, you know?
Yeah.
For listeners out there, that is a little bit of the film Lust for Life, starring Kirk mm-hmm. Douglas as Van Gogh, which I urge you to see if you've never seen it, because Kirk Douglas and Van Gogh in the same sentence, just it goes together.
Match made in heaven.
Yeah. So, at any rate, Duncan, so what happens is all of the guests kind of take off, and it's really just the staff that's left. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the bunker is, surprise, surprise, kind of haunted. And it goes through this sort of like, okay, why is it haunted? Who is haunting it? That kind of thing. The problem with the movie, Duncan, is that it's so boring.
like everything you said just now sounds like the most exciting shit ever.
It sounds really good. I agree. When I watched it, I was like, oh, this sounds like it may be a real kind of diamond in the rough, that, you know, this has a lot of interesting elements. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do that much with the whole LARPing scenario, other than one of the characters is a little too into being a Nazi, kind of thing. And the main character, this woman who is like part of the staff, is, oh my goodness, turns out she's pregnant. And it's one of those things where it almost feels like part of the script was written by computer intelligence, you know, where it's like, okay, take a bunch of horror tropes and throw it all into this script. Yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer. It's just really dull. By the time you get around to, oh, here's what's actually going on, the movie's over. And yeah. It's like, why don't you set this up, you know, pay off the, like, okay, here's what the ghost is and what the ghost wants, and let your third act really be that. As opposed to the last 10 minutes, you kind of like, oh, all right, I guess I see everything that's going on now. But at this point, I just don't care.
Yeah,
it's a real bummer, because there has been some great stuff that Shudder has put out recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the fact that they're grabbing up these kind of indie horror movies and giving them a home and trying to elevate them, you know, or at least in terms of awareness. You know, like The Spine of Night was one that they just picked up, and mm-hmm. and I think that's a really interesting movie. It's not 100% for me, but I thought it was kind of rad, and at least in what it's trying to accomplish. And
mm-hmm.
you know, for every Spine of Night and The Boy Behind the Door,
yeah,
there's one of these where
yeah.
you're like,
there's a weird, we mentioned before, there's a weird balance. They've got that The Cellar that I just saw at Fright Fest is this month, so you'll be able to check it out and see if I was far away from my comparisons directly to fucking Hellraiser, which that movie has a hard-on for so much. Like Hellraiser with a little bit of the Beyond, but not as good as either. But I know you'll check it out, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Yeah. Let me hit you up with a doc, though, because I have been like binging true crime docs at the moment, like absolutely fucking ravenous for them. There's a brand new one dropped on the old Netflix. It dropped like two, three days ago, called Trust No One, The Hunt for the Crypto King.
It is
fucking fascinating. Like it's not a series or anything like that. It's about an hour and 40 minutes, and that is an hour and 40 minutes that weaves twists and turns and leaves you in a bit where you're like, is he dead or is he not? Like still at the end of it, and then it actually has a point, and like it leaves you with people saying, like, it's like a really interesting commentary on conspiracy as well in the background, which I love when you can tie that in, because it's all internet sleuths and all the other stuff that's going on. But there's a bit at the end even where that, like, we could, you know, they could physically exhume the body, do a DNA test and come back and say it is his body that's in that casket, and people would still be out there saying, well, they paid to have the test results changed and that's not him, and he's still out there with my money. It is super. It takes a turn in the middle that had me going, what? This guy. Like, honestly, well worth your time. Is it like, it's one of those, just shove it on in the background, sit down, you know, you don't have to pay intricate attention to what's going on, you'll get the gist of it. And it also reminded me why I have not even not even remotely invested anything in Bitcoin.
Yeah, that all seems like that, and
it all seems dodgy. There's not one positive, but I've yet to hear one positive Bitcoin story. And everyone that seems super excited about Bitcoin seems super excited to sell you their Bitcoin. Yeah. Like, so,
well, you know, this is my rule of thumb with any kind of currency, is if I can't go to the store and purchase something with it.
Yes.
And also it needs, I know the whole idea is like, oh, it's this decentralized and deregulated form of currency, but it's like, well, that doesn't do you any good, because without regulation and some kind of standardization where you can count on the value to be relatively stable.
Well, this is why it keeps going, as you would say, in my country, as my granddad used to say, I'm doing all these little things every now and again, because I know the people out there like them, it would explain why its value goes up and down like a horse's knickers.
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
it really is. Yeah. And like, it never stays steady. It fluctuates like a motherfucker, and that's because it doesn't exist. It's numbers on a computer. It doesn't exist.
It's all speculative investment, and I'm just not. I don't have that kind of courage when it comes to my money. I like, you know what I like? Real estate. I was gonna say, go and
put down a deposit on your house with Bitcoin and see what happens.
Right. Like I had to take out, or I'm in the process of like having to take out a home equity loan.
Yeah.
And you know how I can do that? Because I have equity in my home. You know?
That's right.
Because here is a physical thing that I owed, and the bank is going to give me money based on that. You know?
Yes.
And like when China announced like, oh, we are never going to take Bitcoin.
Well, that's why they cover it like specifically in there that's the turning point for like China said, you know, we're not dealing with this, and then the value just plummeted because everyone was like, we thought China, like, what made you think China would accept a deregulated currency, fucking ass clowns?
The number one economy in the world is not going to take your made up money.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I for a long time I was pitching them Bocoin, and China was like, no, we are not taking that. And I was like, are you sure? Because I've got a lot of it.
Yeah, there's loads of it here. Yeah. Please.
All right, let me also kind of back that thing up, Bo. Another true crime documentary that I haven't finished the whole series yet, but it's been really fun, is I've been catching up to The Confession Killer, that Henry Lee Lucas.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm most of the way through that.
It's fucking great, yeah.
And that's, I always enjoy a serial killer story.
Mm.
And seeing the twists and turns of, like, this knucklehead, this...
Yeah.
Like, Henry Lee Lucas is not a good person, and I don't mean to diminish.
No.
Like, he is a terrible person who did terrible things.
Yeah, at least three murders.
Yes.
Like, I think maybe at the most, actually, three murders can be attributed to him. But, so instantly, not a nice guy, Bo.
No, right. Like, not trying to diminish what the guy did, but those moments where you just realize, like, oh, he is so spectacularly full of shit.
Oh, yeah, and the police are like, oh, do you want that? Another case closed. Book him, Dano. Let's ferry him around the country, and let's just get all these cold cases closed so we don't have to deal with them and our books look better.
It is
staggering. There's that one where they literally say that he would have had to take a flight from one side of America to the other, and then essentially go straight to find the person and kill them, and then go right back in a vehicle, and then go right back over to the other side of the country. And he would have only just made it to his work where he clocked in that day. Like, the fact that anyone even thought that was plausible is a scathing indictment on the investigation services that were handled in those cases. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. I think that what the documentary does a good job of is kind of speaking to this kind of knee-jerk, you know, desire to close cases, whether or not, you know, you just, hey, you've got somebody agreeing that they committed this murder, case solved. You know, there's also
that part with, like, with the other police forces, like, it's something we don't take into account. Like, if you're a homicide detective investigating a case and you don't solve it, that stays with you, especially if it's a bad one. Like, that stays with you. So if someone then starts to come in with some details that sound vaguely similar, you know, the willingness to accept that, you know, as a, not just even as a, like, it just closes the case, but I'd like to almost get that off your conscience.
Yeah.
Is something that they're drawn to. And I get it's a human element, but then you've got the, and it does a good job, you get this at the end, actually, of it, where they actually start talking to like the victims' families who are like, this guy didn't do it. You know, like, there's the evidence is there saying he didn't do it, and the police just won't entertain who killed my sister or my, you know, my mother or my daughter. They just won't do it anymore because, as far as they're concerned, case closed.
I think the other interesting thing that they talk about in terms of just the police forces are these, like, local municipalities that have this horrendous murder on the books.
Yeah.
But, like, the biggest crimes that they normally deal with are, like, you know, drunken disorderlies and stuff like that. And so when they're all of a sudden in the presence of this, you know, serial killer, then it's just head over water. They're, like, they're not equipped to deal with this and to have the proper skepticism of like, all right, I know what you're saying, but also, are you full of shit?
It's a fascinating documentary. It's one of those ones where like it merits its series length.
Yes.
Because there's a lot to it. So,
well, Duncan, it feels
speaking of things that have a lot to them. Well, let's reverse this, Bo.
Let's turn the ship around into something that is just utter nonsense.
The second episode, and you know, back to back episodes where this could have been handled in 10 minutes.
All right, here's the funny thing, and we took a fair amount of time in the upfront just talking about different movies and stuff. This isn't going to take that long because not that much happens in this episode.
Nothing happens in this episode. It's just you can compactly tell it quickly.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the showrunners of Slasher know they can do.
This is another argument for Slasher being only 6 episodes.
Oh, this season. Yeah. Hell yes. Hell to the yes. There's two. The problem is they've set it over a weekend.
Yeah, well,
it's like the previous season, they set it over a day, but each episode was an hour. Like, so, you know, or covered, like, what was it, 3 hours?
Yeah.
Whatever the time frame was, it covered that, so you were getting plot line. This is supposed to be happening over a weekend, and the natural breaking point for a television show is, you know, end of the day, or like big killing event or something. And they're really struggling with that. And it's not that, I just feel like they're trying to drag out storylines. That's for the video people that are checking us out here. Storylines, but in a way which doesn't make sense. It's there's so much padding and so much pandering to nothing, like non-events in this, that it becomes a bit tiresome. And then also, every character just seems to be getting progressively worse. On every episode, I'm just like, even the bit that made me think you were an okay character is now lessened by this episode to the point that I actively hate them all.
Except for Dawn, but
Dawn's like, she's immune to all the criticism we will ever have on Slasher. But everyone, including our final girl, who I'm now at a point going like that, I don't actually even know if I understand. I understand why you're being as aggressive, but I don't actually know if I like you as a character either, if I can be bothered with you surviving, so...
Yeah, I agree. Like, I understand why she does what she does, but it doesn't make her a very fun character. Like, I'm not rooting for her. The only person I'm rooting for is Dawn, and also the orphan. You know? Yeah,
Dawn will not survive. We know this because I think on the poster of Slasher, she's one of the heads mounted on the wall. Yeah, so if we can get her through it the last episode, though, I can live with that.
Well, we've only got 3 left. So no matter what, she's at least going to be at 33% of
you
the
have
final
jinxed
game.
This. She will die in the first scene of the next episode.
I don't think that's the case. I think we know who's dying.
Eaten by an orphan.
Oh my god. All right. So this is episode 5. It's called Family Ties.
Yes.
And not the Michael J. Fox series.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, it's not. This one, so like to recap, the end of the previous episode, the maid died by suffocation. She was buried alive.
Right. And so
on a beach.
Liv comes back to the house after her mother has been creep-showed by the killer.
Yeah. She's going to hold her breath for a long time.
Thank you. And Vincent appears behind her, kind of unseen.
Yeah, like a fucking molester.
Yeah. Well, and she's going back to their bedroom or her mom's bedroom and finds these stab wounds in the sheets from when Florence busted in and tried to kill the pillows.
A silent assassination where she screamed while she was stabbing the covers.
Die! And she finally realizes that Vincent's there, and she's like, hey, where's my mother? And Vincent's like, I hope she's dead. And you're like, Whoa, man.
Yeah. Like, let's chill out.
Which, you know, I get because she did orchestrate, as we learned in the last episode, his kidnapping. But it was really David Cronenberg that...
Kept it going,
for his life, you know, like...
for everything up to the point that he arrived back. In fact, even Cronenberg brought him back on this island.
Yeah.
Specifically to take part in this game, which is killing them all off. So, just going to say he's not there. I also have a theory about Cronenberg in this one. I now have a new theory. I think Cronenberg wants Liv to take over.
Sure, yeah.
Think specifically, he's put all, like, he's like, didn't acknowledge her, you know, sent her away, like made her learn the hard way, hasn't treated her with the affection, which he doesn't show anyone, but like, you know, hasn't given her anything really, any leg up at all. But yet, look at all the challenges, including the challenge in this game. It's climb rope. You would learn that in the army. It's an obstacle course where you have to jump over things. That's army training. And paintball.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
It's all geared to her.
I could see where Cronenberg would have respect for her just because she's had to kind of do it all herself. And his big complaint with all his kids is that, like, you've had everything handed to you.
Had every advantage handed to you, and you've still turned out like shitty.
Yeah, you're just a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
And so Vincent tells her, you know, I spent 3 days pissing and shitting myself in the back of this car before getting handed over like a pack of meat. And then he and Liv just scrap. They just start fighting.
He's like, Vincent is not the smartest tool in the drawer, because he tries to hit her, gets taken down spectacularly, thinks, you know what, I'll try that again. Guess what? Gets his ass handed to him a second time. And then, for some reason, is like, 3 times the charm. And then goes in again, and then gets put in an armbar, rather vicious looking armbar, where Liv's about to snap that arm.
Yeah.
She's full on.
I like that she calls him a demon child.
She does call him a demon child. That's because, like, she's now had all the repressed memories of when he almost burned her alive as a child, but. And so she holds on this, but I now like that Slasher has become, like we mentioned this in the previous episode, is basically become Scooby-Doo. Like, everyone appears at the door at the same time to see what the commotion is. Like on schedule, all queued, they're all right there. And she's like, I'm going to fucking break his arm. And Florence is feigning, like, any sort of kind of, oh no, you need to let him go.
Yeah.
We get rid of her this episode, Bo, and I am... We'll get rid of her next episode, but we pretty much got rid of her this episode.
So Theo is the one who finally talks Liv down, is like, you gotta let him go, please don't snap off his arm.
Yeah, because we're twins and I'll feel it.
Florence calls her, and I quote, a feral little cunt.
Yep. So on Shudder, so we can drop C-bombs.
Yeah. And which was also my college band.
I heard it was grindcore. It was absolutely amazing.
It's we had an axe to grind, that's for sure. and Liv ends up telling Theo, like, hey, my mom was last seen at the dock, and I'm trying to find her. Yeah. And so they decide that they're going to go search by the dock and then onto the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, while Liv and Theo have taken off to look for her mom, Florence and Vincent and O'Keefe are all kind of commiserating, and Florence and Vincent kind of tell O'Keefe, like, hey, we need to get cool with the idea that Theo is just not part of our cabal. He is working for Liv, and we all agree that Liv is a crazy person. And O'Keefe, to their credit, is like, I don't know. I mean, like, Theo seems like the only person here that's like a human being with a conscience and decency. Yeah.
She can flip-flop, Bo, because she's so poorly written. You know what I mean? She can flip-flop from episode to episode with glee and with gay abandon.
their change in this episode to being very pro Florence for no good reason is head scratch. Anyway, I mean, she's spoilers. She's not going to be on the show after this episode, which is great because watching this character pivot from moment to moment is crazy.
Yeah, it doesn't make it like we're going to have like a kind of a heart to heart with her and Grace later on, which.
All right. We'll get, there's a scene coming up where I'm like, you know what? If that's where the character is in life at this point, maybe death is the best case. So anyway, so we'll get to it.
I love that I love your line as you, if you can't make an omelet, then you deserve to asphyxiate.
It's not just make an omelet, Duncan. It's being completely confused by the concept of a mixer. If you have reached this stage in your life and you're just like, I have no idea what this beating device is, nor how to use it in a way that just your eyes and you know, even if all you had was just the root of a brain, just the part that keeps you breathing.
Yeah.
Anyway. So.
Yeah. Even Aphra, who can't speak like a human being, speaks like a caveman, knows how to work a mixer.
Right. She walks in and is like, blender, good. Aphra, no blender.
Oh, man, this fucking show.
All right, but so on the beach, Theo spots the tuft of hair that indicates, like, oh, I think your mom is buried up to her face here, Liv. And sure enough, we get a shot of, you know, Liv's mom, like, in the sand with a crab walking over her face.
And yeah, discolored eye. She's only been dead less than 12 hours, and she's got a discolored eye, and her body appears to have putrefied. Okay, then.
Yeah, and then, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, slasher.
Yeah. And so... Grace,
I do like the fact that our intro music is now starting to resemble like a digital penguin. You know what I mean?
Digital penguin, like Burgess, by the way, like, was like Burgess,
Burgess Meredith did. It was Burgess Meredith did the penguin. If he did like the voice of Megatron, that's kind of the sound of the intro music for Slasher.
All right, let me verify this, but I believe that Burgess Meredith,
do not tell me he voiced Megatron or I'm out of here.
No, he did. Maybe he didn't. I would have sworn that Burgess Meredith was in the Transformers the movie cartoon. But
it's Orson Welles you're thinking about.
Well, Orson Welles and also
Leonard Nimoy
is, because I figured, like, if you've got Orson Welles and Leonard Nimoy and also Robert Stack all in the same movie, Burgess Meredith is not far behind.
Oh, he's somewhere. He's somewhere. Even if he's cheerleading in the background, he's there. I just don't get him. All right, cool, whatever. We're into the show proper, Bo. And boy, what an episode this is going to be.
All right, so here is a detail that I really like in this episode, which is we are just turning the pantry into the makeshift morgue of this island.
It reminds me of, there's a... It's actually, weirdly, in a lot of respects, it is making reference to Five Dolls for an August Moon, which is a Bava movie, which is also actually just based on a Christie novel. So, can't remember the name of it. That'll come back to me. Essentially, that's what they do in that one. As and when characters die off, interestingly enough, characters that are all brought to an island to seek a prize, and the last one living will get said prize.
Are you thinking of Then There Were None?
Yes, and Then There Were None. That's basically what this is. This is Aaron Martin's, like, shitty version. His, you can read this on the toilet, whilst taking a dump version of And Then There Were None. Then the pantry has become the de facto morgue, where Grace is in there talking to what's left of her child. Poor Jaden.
Oh, look what a mess they made of my little boy. And So amongst the jarred tomatoes and eggs and corpses,
yeah,
Grace is talking to her son. O'Keefe interrupts and is like, oh, sorry, I just came for eggs.
Yeah, we're all hungry. I know you're not looking at your dead son, but...
Right, and I'm just hoping there's been no cross-contamination between corpses and eggs here.
Yes.
But then O'Keefe tells Grace, like, oh, you know, I just wanted to let you know, I really thought the world of Jaden. Jaden always cared about people. And Grace is like, thank you for such kind words. You know, I think it's time for a montage.
Well, like, yeah. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep me right. down. You're
sunlight streaming through the kitchen windows as these two crazy kids.
I think as well, like, that sentence that O'Keefe said about Jaden, you know, boy, wouldn't that be justification for a flashback, Bo? Like, to see the good in a character,
yeah.
You know, like, wouldn't that be nice? Because then it would make me, I don't know, care for the fucking character.
I can't remember where he posted, but Jason, stalwart Duncan and Bo, come correct the listener, Jason Gray, posted some link to, like, a writing thrillers for television kind of workshop from Aaron Martin. And it was like, oh, I mean, is the Class Number One just flashbacks?
Like, Class One flashbacks. If you don't have a flashback, you've not read the story.
Right. Class Number Two, look through articles on social commentary from 10 years ago or more to get your best characters.
Because, like, the thing that I thought about is every flashbacks in slasher are designed for one purpose, and that is to, like, reveal how shitty people are, and never to reveal how good people are.
Yeah.
Right? That's the sole mechanism is this character's going to die. We're going to show you a lot of flashbacks in this episode to justify their death.
For four seasons, we've gotten this. Where there is no change to the formula, and that's the thing that, to me, is head-scratching, that no point, as a creator, that Aaron Martin isn't like, you know what, let's mix this up a little bit to make it fresh and interesting for both me as the creator and for the audience who knows this routine. And instead, it's just like, hey, I'm gonna give them the same old boring shit.
Yeah, it's an Instagram filter. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you literally put the same sheen over everything and you don't put any thought on it. But it's these sort of things that annoy me where, like, the younger generation of the family who are the ones that the show are kind of pivoting towards as being, for the most part, the future to an extent. They're all having these conversations about what a great guy Robin was to Theo, like letting him listen to music, or like how great Jaden was to, like, O'Keefe, like, do you seem like he really cared? If you want me to, like, be shocked when a character dies, show me that in a flashback.
Yeah.
Like, give me a hook in that will make me shocked, dismayed, despondent, or even marginally feel something when that character's not there. But no. It's more important to spend the next scene talking about omelets, Bo.
Yeah, so Grace decides she's going to teach O'Keefe how to make an omelet. This is the point where I'm like, okay, well, we're not losing a cure for cancer when O'Keefe goes. Because not only does O'Keefe not know how to operate a mixer.
Yeah.
And by the way, Florence is kind of coming into the room looking disapproving about all of this business.
Yeah, because Florence doesn't know what it is to be a mother to O'Keefe, which you're going to find out with great poignancy and the exclamation fucking mark at the end of this episode. Yeah. She's kind of in the background just going...
Ugh. Well, and coupled with, I don't know how to use a blender.
Yes.
Comes, okay, also, let me go to the stove where there's an iron skillet sitting on the heat, and I'm just going to grab the handle like a moron because I've never learned the basic laws of thermodynamics and the conduction of heat.
Yes.
And then...
I'm so glad that we decided to make this our non-binary character, you know, like in the TV show, to show how inclusive we are by making this character a fucking idiot.
Right. a complete moron that serves no purpose, that has no loyalties to anyone, no basic knowledge of the world around them, and is doomed to die horribly just to prove how terrible another character is. It is
100%.
It's a rotten character, and and I feel bad for the actor saddled with having to deal with it. But
yeah,
all right. So here's our first flashback of the episode where Florence is, you know, looking down her nose at O'Keefe, like learning basic culinary skills, and mm-hmm. still not getting it quite right. In fairness, but and it's her literally cutting up money.
Yes.
To make this collage. And Grace comes in, and clearly it's happening, you know, at the family home. And Grace walks in, and she kind of looks at this collage, which is garbage, and is like, oh, okay, so that's what you're doing. And you're literally cutting up $100 bills. Okay, well, you know, why give that money to charity, I suppose? And Florence kind of gives Grace a bunch of shit about, like, oh, well, you couldn't appreciate art because I'm sure they didn't teach you art appreciation when you were studying about bedpans in nursing school or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Grace, to her credit, is like, I think I know good art regardless. And this is shit.
This ain't it. This ain't it.
And the one thing that the show gives me, which I like, is just people continually shitting on Florence throughout this episode. And this is
The worst. She is hands down the worst character in the four seasons of Slasher. I am now on that. I mentioned before, even the neo-Nazi, like homophobic racist from the previous season.
Yeah.
Had redemption at the end. It was terrible redemption, but had redemption at the end. There is no redemption for Florence because she is fucking awful.
Yes. And made worse by the fact that she thinks she's a good person or a decent person.
She 100% thinks. There's a telling scene later on which sums up that character in a way where I was like, that's good writing.
Yeah.
But, and it's, we'll get to it, but it involves her actually saying, well, there was only one mask.
Yeah. Right.
And the person going, like, but you shared it. And she's like, but there was only one mask. And it's the realization that at no point at all was the consideration not that that mask should be shared and not just purely on my face. And it's a great line. It's a great line. It's really well written. It works for that character, but it doesn't mean we have to go through a shitload of this character's horrible art bowl. Horrible art. Oh.
So we go back to present where Grace and O'Keefe are talking about spices, and Florence inserts herself in this conversation, and she says, O'Keefe, watch your fingers around this one. She's got a real taste for them.
Yeah.
On account of Grace having bit off Florence's finger. Mm-hmm. Then we go back to our pantry/morgue. Where Liv is hanging out with her mom and Theo's just kind of watching over all of this. And Liv is like, I just don't understand how anyone could hate my mother that much.
Yeah.
And Liv is like, all right, that's it. I'm done. We got to get off the island. And Theo's like, yeah, but you told me that the one boat to get us off the island is not seaworthy. And I'm down. Like, I'll go with you, but you have to prove to me that we are not getting in a boat that's immediately going to sink a drowning boat.
Yeah. It's like 2 minutes later, they both got buckets.
Yeah, right.
Water.
And, right, like, I don't want to end up like your mom. I mean, I know maybe too soon, but, you know, let's be real. Like, her eyes are freaky.
I, unlike your mom, can't hold my breath for a long time. So,
And so... Liv agrees, like, all right, I'll get the boat patched up and prove to you that it's seaworthy, and then we'll take off. And on her way out the door with Theo, we do get a shot of the pantry of just getting stacked up with bodies like cordwood in there. And I'm like,
yeah.
All right, that's not terrible. But all right, so then we have our breakfast as prepared by O'Keefe and Grace, which, you know, which omelets O'Keefe did, because it's the one with all the bits of shell
Yeah.
And
it's the one that is just raw egg with spice over the top of it because she hasn't fucking cooked it.
Yeah.
Or mixed it or anything. It's just a plate of goop.
And Dawn is encouraging the orphan, like, you need to eat something, honey. Yeah. And as that scene is unfolding, a bell rings from a cabinet.
Oh, dude, I thought this cabinet was going to open and there was going to be a TV in it. And I'm so glad there was no TV in this one because I thought, like, has he just placed these TVs around the house? Just in case, like, I anticipated that you would destroy the last one. It was you, wasn't it, Dawn?
For a second, I thought it had rolled into the room like that robot that Rocky has in Rocky IV.
Uncle Paulie's there for no reason at all.
Right.
It's
looks like we got another game here, Rock.
They go up and they open the cabinet and it's full of paint guns, paintball guns. And they're like, oh, paintballs. Well, this shouldn't be too bad. These won't hurt. And for some reason, and this is where I was like, I think Bo might be right. I think the orphan might be just straight up like a 60-year-old Slovakian militant. Because she picks up this paintball gun and Dawn's like, no, 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 honey, you're not playing. She's like, ah. And she's like, no, 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 you're not playing. And then
Theo walks in.
Yeah, and she accidentally, in quotation marks, shoots Theo. And Theo's like, ah.
Yeah.
And they're all like, man up, man. It's like a paintball. And he lifts it up. And paintball, this is where the show kind of gets things wrong. You get shot with a paintball, it will break the skin.
Yeah, yeah. It'll leave a big hole.
Anyway, regardless. Yeah. This is supposed to be a rubber bullet. See, if you get shot with a rubber bullet, you go down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't get back up. But this show's playing loose with that. He lifts up his shirt where apparently it went through his shirt. Because he's got a hole in his shirt. That's not how rubber bullets work. But he's got a hole in his shirt, right? As if this thing, you know, it was strong enough to pierce fabric material, but not skin. And there's this, like, already, like, visibly very, very, very sore and, infected mark on him.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, listen, I'm like, oh, it's rubber bullets. And then we get the game. And this game is the least well thought out of all of them thus far. This is some lazy writing, Bo. Lazy, lazy writing. Which is basically, go out, play paintball.
Uh-huh. You got 15 minutes to hide. Then the game is on.
Yep. Like, the winner and the runner-up, or the person the winner wants to take, can go to the bunker that I have, the family bunker, where all the great memories are. You remember that time you had to lift a gold bar from there and get electrocuted? We're going to go to the family bunker and you guys will be safe overnight. So, like, if anything bad happens, I don't know, like a killer being on the list, then you're going to be fine. Now, this whole thing is very telling when we find out what the twist is, when we know for a fact Cronenberg is behind the killings.
Yes.
Not the one doing it, but he's behind it, which once again gives credence to the nurse.
The doctor Death. Yeah.
Must be, because this is an employee.
Yeah.
This is an employee of Cronenberg that is doing this. This is either a character we have not seen yet, which I don't think it is, or this is Dr. Death, and I think this is Dr. Death.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't disagree with that, although I still think there's an orphan scenario because of
the conclusion of the Afra story is going to be amazing. I'm sure of it. But yeah, so anyway, this is we can get one person and a person of their choosing.
Yeah.
Can go into the bunker. And of course, like, straight away, Liv's like, well, you guys are all fucked. And she lifts up the gun, and I'm like literally sitting there going, oh my God, they're all fucked. And you can see the realization wash all over them. We're like, oh shit.
Yeah, she's trained for this. Yeah, because she's like picking the thing apart. And
Yeah. she's piecing it back together blindfolded.
How long was that, Charlie? You ought to be able to do a 45 and 60.
Oh man, so good. But Liv doesn't even waste time. She's out the fucking door, and the rest of them are all like, well, we need to team together to take her down. We need, like, it's the only way this is going to work. We need to join together. Like, I'm sorry, Grace, that you bit my finger off. We had this one, but if we do not band together, Liv will take us down. Yeah. And also, we think she might be the killer. So, like, clearly not the killer, but we need to band together. And so they come up with a plan, and their plan is really shitty, which is we'll just make Liv angry. She'll shoot all her bullets, and when she's out of bullets, we'll hit her. And then it's a free-for-all at that point, because that's the 10-year link, because there can only be two. So, like, and also, there's no way to regulate this. How does what is stopping you just making a beeline?
Why does Cronenberg set this all up in a cabinet? Because, the TV got destroyed, but Cronenberg couldn't know that.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, he couldn't know this. Like, he couldn't know that the Dr. Death isn't there to administer things. Yeah. But what is stopping anyone? You have 15 minutes left. What is stopping anyone just run into the bunker? Two people just run. Or everyone run it. Well, I can see why I'm glad that everyone didn't run in the bunker. But, like, what's stopping that happening?
Yeah, it's the purge rules of, like, okay, we got to stop killing people at 7 a.m. Well, I mean...
Do we?
You know, like...
That's what that last Purge movie kind of got right. Like, the Purge is over. Well, we're just going to keep killing people. Can we do that? Yes!
Right. Yeah, like, this is all on, you know, assuming that everyone's going to be on their best behavior during the Purge.
It's assuming that people are going to not be people, Bo, and that's not how that works. But yeah, so they go out there. There's a whole lot of, your mom was a real shitty person, Liv. Or, like, to try to, like, bait her into shooting around. And very quickly, Florence picks O'Keefe, most likely because she saw O'Keefe bond with another person.
Yeah.
And she's like, listen, you are clearly, you could not even whisk an egg. You clearly can't handle a fucking paint gun.
You're a shit person and unable to do anything.
Yeah. So what we'll do is you just hide here. Mama's going to go out, kick some ass, like, unbeknownst to us, paintball champion 7 years in a row. I'm going to go out there. I've got a plan. Me and you're going to end up in the bunker. I'm going to come back for you. You just stay hidden. Don't get involved with anything. And then we, like we said, we see Liv start to very quickly dispatch people.
Well, all right. So that, yes, but before even that happens, Vincent shoots Theo just because Theo's in the middle of a speech about how, like, you know, we're terrible.
I'd do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do the same. Yeah. And, like, Vincent's been, well, this is the most realistic Vincent's been as a person, where he's like that, like, oh, here comes another Theo speech. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm going to nip this one right in the bud. And, there's also room for a flashback here, because we go back to Florence taking her shitty art to this museum curator.
Getting eviscerated by the snootiest snooty guy that ever snooted.
This is the one moment of the show that I found really just personally satisfying.
Ah, yeah, because he shits on our art from a great height.
Yeah, he's like...
I love it. He was like that. He's like, did you bring your art in here? Like, we saw the slides and we rejected it then. You didn't need to bring it in person. She's like, yeah, but the photographs maybe didn't do it justice. And he's like, all right, you're one of those.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, honey. You know?
Well, and he basically tells her, like, you're just copying other artists. You don't have your own voice. You haven't suffered at all. Like, you don't have anything to say. And so you're just ripping off better artists and you're making nothing.
Which sadly hatches the idea of what she will use for her art later on.
Yes.
Which is just her family's pain and trauma. When I say her family, I mean her sons first and foremost, and then just embarrasses Cronenberg, who gets another great table speech, where I'm just like, it was every dinner in the Cronenberg house like this, where he would start eating something.
He never finished a meal.
Someone would say something. Yep. But, like, that's why he died, though. That's why he died. Malnutrition.
He never had low blood sugar and no iron in his blood because he would get like a third of the way through dinner and one of his shitty kids would say something.
Dan now need to stand up, swear, and leave. Looks like I'm going to have to do it again. His fucking family. One day I'm going to have an incurable disease and I'm going to set up a murder plot to kill them all.
Yeah,
it's what he does. And whoever wins, I don't have to deal with them because I'll already be dead.
It's what he does with all his spare time when he's not eating. It's just hatching this scheme.
It's like the plan from Home Alone where Macaulay Culkin's got like that. This is the hot iron on the door. This is the fan that blows the feathers. That's basically Cronenberg. So he's got a hand drawn of the, a crayon drawn of the island. He's like, paintball fight here, rubber bullets.
When they come home, there will be mannequins dancing in the windows. It will look like a grand party. And they won't have been invited and will be very disappointed.
I love the fact that your Cronenberg this episode sounds like a Canadian Christopher Walken. I love every second.
It ought to be. Yeah, I can't do a Cronenberg. I can do a more passable Walken.
You imagine the Dead Zone shit. The two of them communicating. I just to be a fly in the wall, listening to those, the direction and the conversation back. Ooh. You know!
I think what you're doing is fantastic work. Thank you. I like the way you talk. I like the way you talk too.
It's my new favorite thing that's happened on the show.
The guy in the raincoat. It's exciting. Yes. He's a savage killer. I think that this is best illustrated by the rocking horse in his bedroom. I know!
No!
It's great. Anyway, so back to the present. Florence Vincent and the orphan are all coming under fire from Liv.
Yeah.
And Florence is yelling across the battlefield, aka the, 30 yards between trees. Yeah. Where, she's like, hey, it turns out if I'll do you a solid, and when I win, I'll give you the housekeeper job because a position has just opened up.
Such a bitch. Such a bitch thing. Kind of awesome, though, at the same time.
And she says, yeah, the last one was positively buried in her work.
Yeah.
And Vincent then gets shot in the throat by Liv.
Yeah.
Which, based on what we've seen, would kill him.
He should be dead. Yeah, Vincent should have dropped like a sack of potatoes and been dead. But yeah. No, he managed to just like walk it off.
Liv does tell him like, my mom should have drowned you, which is pretty good. And but Grace manages to kind of sneak up behind Liv.
She flanks. Yeah, yeah. The old pincer movement. She gets behind and I've studied conflict. Yeah. I understand military strategy. And shoots Liv in the back of the leg. I think this is the same leg that's been sliced at. They're really working on that leg. I think
sweep the leg, Johnny.
I think
put him in a body bag.
I think someone's gonna put her in I have a theory about Cobra Kai that we're gonna talk about later on. When I made a realization about how irresponsible the 80s were in cinema. we'll get to the end. But she's had her leg sliced, she's been shot in the back of it. It's almost as if someone's gonna put the figure four leg lock on her later on and they're just trying to follow through continuity or working on that injured leg. Oh, here comes the figure four. Oh, she's tapping. Yeah. It's game over.
God.
Good God almighty. They killed her. And Mom's got a family. Well, she doesn't really. Her mom's dead now.
She's, the rest of her technically family, which makes all of this with Theo really creepy, but...
So fucking creepy. But anyway, Liv's out, and so Grace is celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes in all full of piss and vinegar, all like so happy with herself, and Florence just making sure that she's the most hated character shoots her in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And takes her eye out.
Yeah, says an eye for a finger.
Because that's how it was written in the Bible, boy. I don't know if you read that that passage.
I've only thumbed through it. I don't know exact quotes. I know the one about a stitch in time saves nine.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Penny saved is a penny earned. I think that's
Deuteronomy. It is. Yep. Did you say Deuteronomy or Deuteronomy?
Both.
Yep.
Deuteronomy, that is the book of bro. The holy bro. Yeah, bro.
The bro. Yeah, I remember that bit where like Jesus' dad was actually Broseph.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
there's Deuteronomy. There's Palms, which is just a series of poems about high fives.
Yep.
There's Brovelations.
Brovelations, Jesus Christ. there's a parody somewhere just begging to be written. But yeah, so Grace loses her fucking eye.
The second book of the Brobel, of course, is called Nexodus because it's the next one. All right, anyway, I'm done.
So Florence wins.
Uh-huh, yeah. And it's just like, all right, O'Keefe, let's hit the bunker.
Yeah, let's jog on to the bunker. Let's go, later, losers. And, she goes down there and we're kind of left with a family that are like, well, now what do we do? because we're all kind of in the same boat here. And so, we finally get a view in the bunker and it's like the set from that 70s show.
Yeah, speaking of bros, yeah, it looks like a man cave.
Yeah,
it's got a mini fridge with pizza in it, and
yeah,
I think there's some BLs.
Yeah, this is literally what this is, Cronenberg's man cave.
Yeah, when he wanted to get away from, like, that's why he had food stashed in there. He could finally get something to eat without having to stand up and march off.
This is for when he has, like, every night when the family has a bust up, he's going to get his. He's stuffed crust in a BL. Right. And it's so they're down there.
Gotta watch Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. But it's like, there's like bottles of champagne and shit like that there. And like O'Keefe, like straight away is like that. Listen, there's plenty of room in here and there's plenty of food. We should get like Vincent and Theo down here. We should do that. We should get them in here because we're all on the one team. We should get them down, plenty of room, all the rest. And Florence, very rightly and also kind of foolishly, says like that, no, if my dad says there's only two people supposed to be in here, there's only two, you don't go against these rules. Yeah. There's two people supposed to be in here.
So when we go back to the house, Duncan, and it's like the scene from Gone with the Wind when after the burning of Atlanta, where it's just bodies as far as the eye can see. Like Dawn is going from person to person, like wrapping up Grace's head wound, you know, checking on a Theo's side and that kind of thing. And she ends up actually telling Theo, like, hey, can you go find some bed sheets? Because we're running out of gauze on account of all the wounds that everyone is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So I need you to basically rip up some sheets, find some sheets that we can rip up.
Well, I suppose it's worth mentioning, like, because the weird thing about the house is there doesn't appear to be like the usual bulk of medical supplies or anything, almost as if someone had removed them deliberately.
Yeah, well,
because they make a plot here to essentially ransack the bunker.
Yeah,
because that's where they think everything's stored. Like all the stuff that would usually be there to help them is you know, it might be there. But yeah, like poor Dawn is, tend to the second wound. I love the fact that she's like, yeah, I think Grace has lost the eye. I'm like, you think? Look at it. There is no eye.
Yeah.
Just a fucking hole.
And we get a shot of the orphan just eating blood from a gauze.
Yeah, which... and then Vincent looking at her going, what the fuck?
So,
vampire.
I mean, something that orphan likes to kill.
Oh, that orphan might be the kid from Let the Right One In.
Right, Ely. And so they're like, one contingent of our group is going to go check on the bunker to try to get in there.
Vincent let slip that maybe he knows how to, I don't know, get access to things that people shouldn't be able to get access to.
Mm-hmm. And Liv is going to stay behind to protect Grace if somebody comes for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to the bunker where Florence and O'Keefe are just talking about what a terrible father Cronenberg was. And we get a flashback here to Florence. This is what we were talking
about. This right now is... I mean... Like, Florence deserves to die a painful death, and what will come is, you know, what will come in the next episode better fucking pay that off.
Yeah.
For all the shit she does in this show. If this is another just, like, weak slap on the wrists, very quick death, I am going to be hugely annoyed. Because this is, like I say, this is easily the most reprehensible character I've ever seen. So this is her bringing Theo in blindfolded to see her new art project, which is an experience. Now, this is her taking the advice of the guy that's like, you need to find your own voice, your own pain, and all the rest. This is how she's interpreted that, which, if anything, is how a psychopath interpreted like helpful advice. This would be like, you know what I mean? This is, it's kind of like that scene in Freddy Got Fingered where, you know, like Freddy gets told that he needs to get inside the animal. Mm-hmm. You need to get inside that animal, and how he interprets that is actually physically finding roadkill, gutting it, and then putting it over the top of him and dancing like Leatherface in the middle of the road. That's basically how she's interpreted this, because he gets brought into this room and he's crunching on sand and he's like, what's this I'm walking on? And she's like, sand. And I knew where this was going straight the fuck away. I was like, oh no. And then she starts playing the police interrogation of very young Theo as to the events that happened the night his brother was abducted to Theo while he's blindfolded. And of course he has full-on panic attack and NAMM-like flashbacks to kinder trauma, and then takes the blindfold off, and then he gets to drink in the visualizations.
It's four screens with different reactions of Florence, you know, some laughing, some screaming, some crying. Then in the center of this art installation is a glass booth with a dummy in a Don't Look Now rain slicker.
Yeah.
Sitting on a chair, and blood just starts pouring onto it.
Yeah.
And she says, I call this Save Me. And very rightly, Theo just loses his nut.
Yeah, he's fucking appalled. Like had the character like turned around and puked in a bucket, I would have understood that reaction.
Yeah, for sure. And so we go back to the present where Florence is just drinking champagne and saying, you know, my children are the greatest works of art I've ever produced. And in the midst
like
of this,
almost on cue, yeah, like as if this was like a code word that triggered a trap for Cronenberg.
Yeah. He appears on a TV screen and he's like, you know, I know you're probably thinking that you're lucky to be here, but yeah, this isn't about luck. Only one person can win. And so you need to display the kind of ruthlessness that the person
you would have to display in the boardroom, yes, essentially. If you're taking over this company, you need to be able to stand on the throat of anyone it takes to lead this company at the boardroom, and this is kill or be killed. And in the case of this one, Bo, quite literally kill or be killed, because the room is then flooded with poisonous gas.
And there is an oxygen tank.
Yes.
And
now, what's telling about this is that instantly O'Keefe's like, we can share this mask. Like, O'Keefe, who has shown no aptitude at all with anything, including just like rudimentary objects, is like, you know, if we share this mask, we'll survive. And our mum's like, one mask. And that one mask is, guess what? Going on me.
O'Keefe ultimately is going to die choking and foaming at the mouth, yeah, while Florence hoards the remaining oxygen for herself.
And also seems confused by the fact that her daughter doesn't have a mask.
Yeah, right.
Like a reaction's like, well, where's your mask?
And outside, though, outside the bunker, Theo and Vincent are trying to bust in, and Vincent's like, oh, if I only had like a little piece of metal or something.
Yeah.
And once again, Dawn to the fucking rescue. And she's like, oh, here, take my earring and you can use that. And then while all of this is going on, we get one more flashback. Well, actually, there's two flashbacks left in this episode,
yeah,
but this one is to Theo realizing that Florence has recorded his reaction on seeing the art installation for the first time.
And she's the thing going to use in the art installation, yeah, book.
And he's like, what do you, like, I don't give you permission to do that. Aside from the fact that just a moral code should disallow.
Aside from the fact of what the fuck were you thinking?
Yeah. And Florence is like, well, if you don't like it, then sue me.
And then she's like, actually, that'd be great if you did that, because all that press is just going to make people want to come and see it more.
Yeah. And Theo tells her very rightly, you are awful and selfish.
Yeah.
And then we
and then we're like, the next scene will prove that wrong. Oh no, look at her, watch her other child die as she hugs the fucking,
yeah. And so when we get back to the present, they finally get the door open.
Yeah.
Theo rushes inside and pulls out O'Keefe, and they verify, like, oh, Dawn,
oh, she's dead.
Dawn, yeah, is like, oh, she's fucking gone. And Theo is like, looks at his mother and is like, what did you do in there? And he goes inside and he's like basically just tossing the bunker like he's looking for evidence. And while he's in there, he grabs some zip ties, which will come into play.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes back outside and they're just like, what happened in there? And this is to your point that
she's like, well, there was gas came in and there was one mask. And Dawn's like, but you know, you had to share it with O'Keefe, and you know she was just unlucky or something. She's like, no, there was only one mask.
Yeah.
And that's when the realization kicks in that she put the mask on herself but not her daughter, and then sat and watched her daughter die in front of her. And this, like, that Theo just fucking snaps.
Yeah.
And about fucking time.
Yeah. And she's like, I don't understand why everyone's acting like this. And he's like, because the mask was on you. It should have been you dead in there.
Yes, because the mask was on you. Like, you should have given up your life, which is many years in now, for your daughter.
Yeah. And we get a shot of the orphan placing some leaves on O'Keefe's body to, yeah, once again, let us know that the orphan is crazy.
Or as seasoning for a later snack.
Right. And so,
are these bay leaves?
Theo throws some zip ties on Florence's hands and starts.
And no one comes to our defense this time.
No.
Not even Vincent. Actually, Vincent seems surprisingly on board with this.
Everyone does, because I think everyone understands what a shitty person this is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they march her, like, Wicker to Man style.
Yeah, to her horrific art installation that we saw in the first episode that David Cronenberg almost died laughing at.
Yeah. And they basically, like, shove her head through one of the holes.
Like it's like a stocks, yeah, or something that you would see in ye old-timey, like, town.
And Theo, who is just having a field day with this, is like, yeah, I call this the trial of the mother of the fucking decade, and
yeah,
this is going to serve two purposes. One, if you survive the night, it proves that you're the killer, and if the,
yes,
killer gets you, it proves you're innocent of everything but being the worst person ever. So best of luck.
Like, to be honest, is actually very, very much like a witch trail then.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we get our final flashback of the episode, which is her getting a residency at, you know, some art school or whatever.
She's reading it out at the table, and it specifically highlights the fact that they're really interested in her family trauma angle that she's got going here, which is like, and she's all excited, and everyone at the table's displaying the right reaction, which is, I don't know if we should be celebrating this. And then Cronenberg, who's like, that, God, that, I'm not going to finish this fucking meal either. I mean,
once again, and he's like, you're making money off of the pain of this family and a personal tragedy that befell this family. And he calls her pathetic.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm thinking Cronenberg knows that Vincent's alive, which is like, he knows that he's hidden somewhere and he's behind that. And he's like, and I'm like, I understand the high horse that you decided to sit on there, but maybe take it down a notch or two, Cronenberg. But yeah, he's like, oh, for God's sake, with that. And we essentially end this episode with, once again, only one death of a inconsequential character that wasn't really vital, important, or was going to be doing much, and setting up what will be the death of the next one into episode 6-3 from the end. Still so many people alive on this island.
Yeah, we need some bloodbaths to start.
We
happening.
Need people gone quick. Like, we have got Dawn, we have got Aphra, we've got Liv, Theo, we've got Grace, Florence, who's still alive, and Vincent. And 3 episodes left.
Yeah.
It's a lot of characters.
All right, so the last moments of the episode are just Florence tied to this sculpture.
I don't want to die, is what she says.
And do we have, like, I don't have any further theories, because...
No, the Dr. Death is behind us.
Yeah.
Like, 100, now that we know that Cronenberg is at... He designed that room for someone to die.
Yeah. And we're going to learn something horrifying about the orphan. That's the other thing.
Anything that relates to, there just happens to be a killer on the island, or even my original theory, which was, well, maybe he's hired Dr. Death to kill him and she's went in for in a business for herself. All that's gone. Cronenberg has set this up that there will only be, you know, there will only be, like, the person that walks off this island is the sole heir, because everyone else is dead. Essentially, yeah, he's pulled a Highlander.
Yeah.
So, like, he's behind this, and to me, there's only one character, even logically, that could be in on this, and that's Dr. Death. So, like, and once again, I'm comfortable with that, but there's this episode, it was all smoke and mirrors. There is no substance at all. It didn't push any story, really, and it didn't kill off a character that needs to fucking go. Like, she needs to be gone. We don't need to have that as a cliffhanger. Florence is never winning the money. Why is that a cliffhanger? Like, you know, like someone like a Theo being in danger or a Liv being in danger at the end of an episode, that's a cliffhanger, because we're like, well, we thought they would be there at the end. This is a waste. And I actively hate this series. Like, actively hate it. I genuinely, this to me is everything that's bad about Slasher that we've seen in snippets from all the other series in one season.
I don't disagree with any of that. Like I was telling you in the upfront, I think that the Solstice season is more mean-spirited, but it definitely is. This is more boring and unsurprising and just shoddily written.
If this is where you are at your fourth season, like, I understand why, you know, if you're Aaron Martin, why you're excited, because you're being greenlit for a season 5. It must get to the point where he thinks to himself, right, maybe I can put this behind me, and then he gets more money flung at him, and he's like, well, maybe we're back doing Slasher again. It's just the most uninspired, like, low-rent shit that I've watched in a while. And the thing that I think is the confusing aspect, I don't base what I think my opinion on stuff will be off the internet, because that's a fool's errand, but the fact that people were like, well, it's better than season three, or it's, you know, it's actually not that bad. It just, it boggles my mind how anyone can come away even thinking that. I like, no one should be happy about their involvement with this season.
I don't disagree. This is a rough one, but we've only got three left, and then we can move
three
on.
Left. I cannot fucking wait. End of May, we will be done with this show.
And we will be able to start anew. With some stuff that's actually potentially pretty good.
I cannot. Those conversations are going to be gold, my friend. Gold.
All right. Well, Duncan, where can people find more out of you between now and when next we speak?
Please check me out on Podcasts Under the Stairs and Teapots Collective. Teapots Collective rapidly pushing an amazing series of shows, doing the nasty, looking at the section three video nasties titles, myself and Mark Ball, about sit down and do a Friday the 13th movie, the very first one, which was on the tier three list for no other reason than... it had blood in it, maybe. I don't know. Fucking who cares? Where to begin with? Continuing to look at film noir, neo-noir. The movie that the listeners are reviewing just now is Strangers on a Train. The movie that I have, I'm about to review, that they'll be reviewing next, is a certain little movie which I think is chef's kiss, which is Brick. And the neo-noir category, because I think that's like, that is just movie. Fucking all good. If you are checking out the opera Omnias, it is coming back in April with a brand new director and a brand new resident host for a shorter season, but one that will hopefully keep you all occupied. And then we just put out an episode of Chronicle where myself and the Baz sat and talked about The Vanishing from 1988. On the main feed of Teapots, it's all the usual stuff coming your way. There will be a Russian roulette this month looking at the Hannibal franchise and other bits and bobs in the background. Very excitedly, we have announced what's happening for summer series this year, and the draw was last night. So the busy work will begin from there. All that stuff can be found at teapotscast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Either search Teapots Collective or Podcasts Under the Stairs. Bo Ransdell, what about you?
You can find pretty much everything I do over at legionpodcasts.com, where you can find not just this show, but you can find The Dark Parade, which is much like Podcasts Under the Stairs. It also has a summer series, has an upcoming episode with the Baz. No. It is, we're about to launch into April, which is nothing but 80s slashers. So nice. Started off with April Fool's Day, and we're doing some Happy Birthday to Me, and we're doing some Hell Night, and we're doing My Bloody Valentine. So all of that stuff is coming up. Heart of Horror with Kate Pollock. Recently we did an episode on Kiss of the Damned, and a discussion.
It's a great fucking movie. Great fucking movie.
And a discussion of what is sexy that includes some stories about choking that you'll probably enjoy.
Nice.
Yeah. And What You Watching with Jamie and Bo, which is Jamie Sammons and myself, just kind of rapping about movies. And lots of stuff. Last but certainly not least is Pick Six Movies, which just wrapped season 19 of that show.
Holy fucking shit.
Yeah. So we are launching season 20, which is called Bombs Away, which is notorious box office bombs. and the first,
give me a tease in the title there.
Cutthroat Island is the first episode of
man, and the thing is, I actually have a lot of I know you're gonna eviscerate it because that's what you do. I have a lot of like, Gina Davis is so pretty in that movie, it is unbelievable. That bankrupted that company, ultimately bankrupted Caralco.
I don't disagree that Gina Davis is beautiful in that movie. I also don't think she's the right person for that part.
Oh, 100%. No. It's like that movie has got the worst casting of all time. It's like some of the, like, so like, honestly, like the, across the board has some of the worst casting I've ever seen.
Yeah. So all of that is
still better than those Pirates of the Caribbean movies, though. So there you are.
The first one's okay. I think after that, it, I would rather watch the first Pirates of the Caribbean than watch Cutthroat Island again, because I've had to watch that movie a lot recently to do my notes and everything for it, and it's a slog, man. That movie.
It's a long movie. It's a long, expensive movie.
Yeah, yeah. And you can see where the money went. It just isn't good. Anyway.
Yeah, but like when we're saying, what would we rather watch here? Would we rather watch the first Pirates of the Caribbean, Cutthroat Island, or Muppet's Treasure Island? And Muppet's Treasure Island comes out on top.
Absolutely. You've got Tim Curry as...
Yeah, you don't need to spend all the money in the world.
Yeah, yeah. That's a no-brainer. All right. The only thing left to do then, other than to say we will be back in 2 weeks' time to do more of this nonsense, is to say to my good friend Duncan, say goodnight, Duncan.
Is to say to my good friend Duncan, goodnight, Duncan.
Ah.
I don't even know if that was right, but who cares?
It's all just nonsense. Ah.